And now, Ameris Bank brings you the Riley Report with Riley Skinner on 1010XL.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk to Riley Skinner, the former Bulls superstar, Wake Forest, unbelievable great man, and a cup of coffee with the New York Football Giants. Hello, Riley.
Mr. Heckin, good morning.
Riley, I want to ask you a tough question right off the bat, and I need you to bring me some analysis.
Hey, would you get mad if he just said, Mr. Heckin, good morning, and say, hey, Jeff, or that would have bothered you on the other way?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But this is Riley, so he would have said, you know, he's fine with you. Yeah. You know, we know that.
Okay.
That was a caller.
Just checking.
Yeah.
It was not a comment on you, really, Riley.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dan knows that.
This is my question for you, Riley Skinner. I've watched a little bit of college football because there's only been a little bit of college football. I'm more enamored with one quarterback than any of these
Baker
others.
Baker Mayfield is who it is.
No. It's Lamar Jackson.
Oh.
I want you to tell me how Lamar Jackson, in your mind right now, projects as an NFL quarterback. Because it seemed to me, in watching him against your second favorite ACC team, North Carolina, that he threw the ball better than he threw it last year.
There's no doubt about it. He looks like he's more scary this year than he is last year, because to me he is starting to look a little more like Deshaun Watson in the fact that he's really running the offense as it's supposed to be run. And Petrino said that since the end of last year to the beginning of this year, is that all he's working on is having him go through reads, learn the blocking scheme, learn the protection scheme, and run the offense the way that Petrino designs it, rather than one read, maybe a second read, and then just start running. And that's what we're seeing him being much more productive now, because he can throw the ball better. I mean, you can absolutely tell he has worked on his pocket passing game and his footwork within the pocket. That dime he threw, that 70-yard touchdown he threw, was one of the most, you know, beautiful long passes we've seen all year. And to say Lamar Jackson threw it, you said that last year, you think you were dreaming.
Right.
But he has improved, and it's scarier now because people have to defend the pass as well as the run with him. And before, it was towards the end of the year, everybody figured out, all right, let's load this guy up, lock down, get one really good corner, lock down their best receiver, and then all eyes on Lamar Jackson when he tries to run. And that's not the case right now. So it's scary. They just need a defense that can stop somebody.
All right, but I asked you, how does he project to the NFL?
I think he's I'm not good at this. I don't see him being a crazy NFL player. Great successful NFL quarterback right now. He reminds me of, do you remember West Virginia's quarterback Pat White?
Sure. Yes.
A little bit of that.
Okay. All right. I was curious. I
mean, electrifying in college, unless something materially changes and he puts on some serious weight.
Yeah.
I don't see him doing the thing that he does right now on a frequent basis in the NFL.
Okay. I've determined, O'Reilly, when it comes to scouting and projecting quarterbacks, college coaches and recruiters don't know what the hell they're doing.
I agree.
I got two guys. Look, hey, Jim McElwain, you want to fix your position? Go spy. Find out who Louisville's recruiting. Try them. Because we're going back-to-back from the Sunshine.
He recruited the heck out of Lamar Jackson.
Well, he did a pretty poor job.
Because Lamar Jackson was already committed to Louisville.
Well, then Muschamp before him. I'm not saying it's all on McElwain, but I know I've seen Louisville now with back-to-back Florida quarterbacks, Teddy Bridgewater and Lamar Jackson, play the position infinitely better than Florida's played in 10 years. It's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know they started to run a little more of the, I guess, run and gun in the NFL. But there's still, when you watch it as a whole, there's still a disparity between the type of football in college and the type of football schemes in the NFL. And I feel like as a coaching staff, you've kind of got to decide, all right, are we gonna go, you know, pitch that we can make you be a great NFL quarterback down the road, or we can help you win a national championship here and hope for the best in the NFL.
It's really a double-edged sword right now, Riley, from this standpoint, because yes, players are more NFL ready from a passing standpoint. They're throwing more passes than ever in college. But
right.
there's such a high percentage that are running this spread offense that the NFL is just not going to run, even to the point that the good running slash throwing quarterbacks that make it into the league, they take away the run from them. They don't want them to run, even though, I mean, look at Colin Kaepernick. Look at the others. So
right, and the schemes in which they're throwing, and I mean the route trees in which they're throwing in college are so much different than the NFL. I mean, like you said, there a lot of these quick hitting passes. There's the bubble screens, there's the quick slants. I mean, a lot of these teams that throw 35, 40 times a game, 80% of the throws are within 10 yards, and that's just not the case in the NFL from the majority of their throws. I mean, they're throwing the deep, you know, the deep hooks and the deep slants and the rail balls that you don't see as much from the, I guess, run and gun teams in college. So I agree with you there, Jeff. It is kind of a double-edged sword. And personally, I'd rather try to be successful in college, try to get a national championship, and then see what happens in the pros, because you never know.
Just to wrap it up on Lamar Jackson, and we'll move on. Just so folks know what he's done in these first 2 weeks. He's thrown for 378 and 393.
And ran for 100, right?
And he's ran for over 100 in both games. 107 and 132. Five touchdowns, eight touchdowns total, no interceptions.
300 passing, 100 rushing in back-to-back games, I'm pretty sure I saw has never happened before. So if it has, it's a very limited number.
He's very intriguing to me, but anyway, I want to.
And by the way, we'll find out
because they play Clemson on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be beautiful. It's the biggest game when we talk about games coming up. But here's another thing, too. The guy's getting not a breath of Heisman prop. He's the returning, and he's been better than all these other guys they're trying to give it to.
He's getting it from this Heisman voter.
Just give it 2 weeks, and it'll be right back to where it started. Just the way he ended last year.
Yeah, he did end poorly. That's fair.
That LSU game was, I mean, it was eye-opening for a lot of people.
Fair enough.
Okay, maybe this guy is more one-dimensional.
I thought that Georgia had the most impressive and non-recognized win this weekend, Riley. And I know that Notre Dame isn't beating down the door to a national title. But I thought it was a real shining moment for the Georgia program. They took 40,000 fans up there. I've never seen Notre Dame Stadium taken over by opposing fan group. I didn't know Georgia had that in them. And to win the game with a backup freshman quarterback, I think it bodes well and speaks well for Kirby Smart in his second year.
I agree. I mean, everybody has said, a lot of people have said, Kirby Smart, they haven't won. Georgia hasn't won the big game. He hasn't won the big game. And like you said, Dev, whether or not this is a end up being a top 10, top 15 team at the end of the year, this was a big program win in terms of on the road, national spotlight, and probably a much improved Notre Dame team. But to have a backup quarterback come into that kind of environment and perform the way they did in a fourth quarter type game was really impressive. And I think the season could have easily gone two different ways if Notre Dame would have come back and won that game, because they were close. And Georgia's defense stepped up, made a huge play to end the game. And, I think this is going to propel them going forward. I really do.
The game you were at, Clemson-Auburn, I understand that Gus Malzahn's offense can have some clunkiness to it from time to time. But, my God, 11 sacks, it doesn't seem possible for a top 15 team to give up 11 sacks in a game.
Yeah.
How much of it was on Stidham, or was any of it? I mean, that's the first.
We were sitting in the south end zone, and so we saw a majority of Auburn's drives from the quarterback's perspective. There was nowhere to throw. I'm not just saying this as an ACC guy. Clemson's defense is absolutely legit, and there was nowhere for him to throw. I mean, so many of those sacks were all coverage sacks, and it was. I mean, we saw two of the best defenses go at each other, and the game ended up, kind of like what everybody thought, low-scoring game. The fact that the over-under was at, I want to say, like 45, would have bet the house on the under from day one. But it was an electric atmosphere. The Clemson's front seven is just silly talented. I mean, the way they get after the pass rusher and the way they bring their defenses and disguise them, from the quarterback's perspective, looking from the south end zone, it looked like a circus in the middle of the box for a while until the snap of the ball, and then Brent Venables had their guys just shooting to their positions and their zones and bringing blitzes that were so hard to see pre-snap. It was an impressive thing, and And Kelly Bryant, quarterback for
did
Clemson,
enough.
I felt like had a pretty gusty performance.
Yeah, he did enough. I'm with you. Ran
nothing
for two
crazy.
Scores, 19 to 29, efficient enough. Poor man's Deshaun Watson right out of the gates is not a bad deal. And Clemson looked like a legit contender to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
They do. They've got to get a little more going from their running game. They're running Kelly Bryant a lot, and he is a runner, but it's more design runs than they did with Deshaun Watson, it seems like. And so I just hope that he holds up, or they need to find a running back that they can rely on, in order to have a sustained, long, successful season.
Hick, where are you out on JT Barrett after the way he played for Ohio State?
Well, I think I said it last year, and now I think everybody's jumping in.
They're in trouble. They look like a four-loss team, don't they, or no?
I don't know if Herbs will let that happen, but I just don't think JT Barrett is. I think he's overrated.
What
I've
happened
watched
the
him,
1 year.
Remember
I
last
wonder.
Year we were talking about him as a Heisman Trophy candidate, and I watched him in a couple games. He's not a good thrower. He's inaccurate. He misses
Dan,
guys. Who are,
I can't.
Who are
I
open.
Can't believe you're letting Jeff get off this easy out after he railed us last Thursday.
I railed against Oklahoma.
Baker
I didn't rail against you.
Oh yeah.
I railed against Oklahoma, and I'll continue
Mayfield
to. Hey, look.
Awful. And JT Barrett.
Well, no. Well, the railing was
only that for you, Ross.
The railing was against Oklahoma and their program, and it'll come to fruition. So sooner, Boomer, sooner. You guys enjoy this while it lasts. You'll choke it away. I mean, it'll come. They got
a pretty good football team.
Yeah, they do. They got a pretty good football team, and they got a pitiful bloodline. So
yeah, but their schedule may be conducive to
is
them.
It? Let me go. I'll go ahead. I'll pick out your first loss here in a second. I'm taking nothing away. I'll eat some crow. They're good.
They're not losing to Tulane.
That was a
nice
win.
They're not losing to Baylor.
No.
Iowa State at home.
No. Texas maybe. Texas has been beating them.
No. K-State.
What do you mean no? They beat them last year.
I know. I just said they're not losing to Texas this year.
Charlie Strong's going to come back and coach that game.
Okie State will be the tough one.
Kansas State will get you on the road, too.
That it factor with Baker Mayfield, something you just got to get behind.
Yeah.
You saw it.
That second half was unreal.
Was. Yeah. Holy cow.
Unreal second half. I mean, yeah. Literally
can't
unreal.
I can't say I condone what exactly he did at the end of the game. But still,
I got no problem with that, by the way.
That's the kind of leader that will get a team around them in a second.
Yeah.
I've never seen so much
exactly
made out of.
He's got everybody bought in that locker room to get behind him.
Yeah.
And they're playing at a high level.
FSU's been ripping up sod from opposing places. Tennessee will lead the band when they win. I mean, Ohio State, cry me a Ohio River. You got to be kidding me. Not to mention, I would say this about Baker. I'm sure he's not a rocket scientist down there at Oklahoma, but you're really not. You're not jabbing that plastic ended in a flagpole into the field turf.
If that thing would have stood up, it would have been a much cooler celebration.
Yeah, not going to happen. So, all right, well, let's do this. Let's break. We'll come back on the other side, and let's talk about what's on this week's schedule, a schedule that is once again stilted because of weather. It's the Riley Report brought to you by Ameris Bank, and it continues next on The Drill. The Drill, we talked about how impressive Georgia's showing was, but the other big story really in South Bend and Riley Skinner rejoins us here to bring you the Riley Report brought to you by Ameris Bank every Thursday morning. Riley, Brian Kelly is just it's becoming almost like a toxic relationship up there with him and the media, him and the fans. What are your impressions of Brian Kelly, the coach and the face of Notre Dame football?
I'm with you. I'm getting tired of it a little bit. If I were number one in the media, I mean, you wouldn't want to. He's becoming kind of how Paul Johnson views the media, and he just doesn't seem like a pleasant guy to be around. I mean, win, lose, or draw, as a player, you feel like he's got his head and his mind in other places. I mean, when he comes out and admits over the summer that he spent too much time just trying to raise money than coach his football team, that's not a very comforting thing to hear as a recruit or as a player in terms of his interest and care for what's going on. And just his attitude towards everybody just seems very, very bitter. And the way that he takes losses, I can't say I'm all that impressed, nor will I want to go, play for a coach with that kind of attitude, honestly.
And what happens, too, when he made those excuses that was the storyline earlier this offseason, is now you have no room. Because I thought he was unfairly criticized for his press conference demeanor the other night. He was asked a rambling, stumbling, idiotic question by a college reporter. And I thought he did a very good job to maintain his composure as good as he did. before he finally just – he didn't even really snap at her. He just kind of dismissed her a little bit. And then, you know, on ESPN that night, Finebaum was just destroying him like he cussed her out. So he's got – I mean, he seems to be very unliked right now just about anywhere you turn.
And he's not the first coach to do that to media reporters. I mean, honestly,
no, that's what I mean.
Question,
yeah.
When you listen to that question,
it was terrible.
I don't blame him for just asking her to get the question out and then calling her out on they didn't lose by a possession, they lost by a point,
yeah.
Whatever, which is
well,
pretty
she
funny.
Just, and she
but
just,
it's just yeah. It's just the way that he carries himself outwardly. You know, we don't know what he's like behind the closed door with his players, but what we see from the public perception is not a good one. It's not one that screams positivity and encouragement from a player's perspective.
I just wonder if Brian Kelly's lack of success is more an indictment on Notre Dame football than it is on Brian Kelly. How good can Notre Dame football be? Can it be a perennial pick to be a Final Four team? It doesn't appear to be that way. We've been talking about Notre Dame.
Why not?
Well, I'll tell you why.
What
I don't know, but I'll tell you. Because
one of the most historic programs in the country,
yeah.
There's no way they shouldn't be successful.
Well, they were one of the most historic programs in the country till about 1974 when Arrow left. I mean,
Lou Holtz was very, very good for his 8-year period. They were a top team every year while he was there, seemingly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's what's happened. You want to know why?
Listen, they went to the national championship.
Well, and they were completely
I'm saying they could flash, but can you be a perennial program where they're going to sit there and say, you can be don't forget about Notre Dame. Like they say, don't forget about Alabama every year. Like they say, don't forget about Florida State. I mean,
yes, I think they can. It just has to do with the head coach.
Well, I'll tell you what has happened with Notre Dame football.
People were saying that about Michigan until Harbaugh got there.
Yeah.
I mean, just bring somebody like Harbaugh into Notre Dame. I think people in Notre Dame are probably getting a little stale on Brian Kelly, and they see that they've kind of maxed their potential out with one trip to the national championship, and now it's in a pretty steepward, decline. And why not go and start that search and bring a big name in? Pay people the way that Alabama and Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State are playing. Bring a perennial, a trophy head coach in there. And I think you'd see things turn around.
Well, I think what's happened to Notre Dame, and we've applied a ton of reasons from academic standards to this, that, and the other, but at the end of the day, times change, demographics change, and the best football players in America are no longer Catholic school kids. It's a great big country where they're playing sports and very athletically at a lot of places, so you just can't go cherry-picking the best Catholic football players all over the country and then have the best team in the country. It doesn't work that way anymore, so I think that's a big reason.
Well, and the way their schedule is, it's tough. I mean, you put yourself in a tough position playing the people they do week in, week out without being in a conference to get into a national championship or college football playoff with one or two losses right now.
Let's talk about Tennessee, Florida. There aren't, with the havoc wreaked by Florida State, Miami, again, are off. We'll talk next week about what a delay like that can mean for the Noles, but that game has been rescheduled. UCF won't play this week. Florida, Tennessee, one of only two games that match a pair of top 25 teams. What do you expect
allegedly
to see in Gainesville?
Yeah, I was going to say, the delay last week for Florida may be just as big as the, Florida State-Miami game in terms of what Florida's got going on offensively. I mean, that's the kind of game you need under your belt in order to gain confidence in whichever quarterback they end up going with. But it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Felipe Franks is still the guy.
Yes.
And, So what to expect? I think Tennessee's a little better probably than people give them credit for. I think starting off with Georgia Tech first game of the season is a tough opener. And the way they fought back and played, you see some talent on that field, and their quarterback is swinging around fairly well. Granted, they gave up a boat ton of offense, but they're playing a team that isn't really equipped right now to put up a boat ton of offensive yards. So I think it's going to be a pretty close game. Playing in Knoxville. No, they're playing in Gainesville, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They're playing in Gainesville, so you've got the swamp factor
Florida's going to beat the pants off of Tennessee, you guys.
I don't think so.
Well, you never. If we went by your thoughts, Florida'd be 5-7 every year. Let's be honest here.
Oh dear.
I mean, you have them losing every week, Riley. I mean, last year, honestly, they'd have been 6-6. Weekly predictions.
Dan, I choose the Gators week one, and I immediately get that now we're hurt.
Yeah, that's a good point. We need you picking Tennessee. That's fair. And 6-6 probably not quite accurate. The only real game on the schedule all week is Clemson-Louisville, and you saw Clemson firsthand. Clemson's a 3-point favorite on the road. That's strange to me.
In what way you think?
Louisville at home is. I mean, I think Louisville is, they don't have a win over a program like Auburn, but I think Louisville to go on the road and beat North Carolina and play the kind of offense we just documented. You're going to see the difference between a transfer quarterback and a born and bred and developed quarterback, and notice how Lamar Jackson does against that defense compared to Stidham a week ago.
I'm really excited about this game because we right now are looking at one of the best defenses in college football, so we think, through week two in Clemson, and the best offensive player maybe in the nation in Lamar Jackson. And, you know, they played Auburn's offense. Clemson played Auburn's offense, which is good, not great, but it was a transfer quarterback. And Louisville went against North Carolina's defense, which is about as, you know, hard to stop as warm butter. So they haven't really had a huge challenge, and they're about to get the best challenge possible, both from Clemson's defense and Louisville's offense. I personally think Louisville's going to put some points up on Clemson's defense. But at the same time, I think Clemson's offense is going to be able to score on Louisville's defense because year in and year out, that's their Achilles heel, except a couple years ago. So I think it's going to be a little higher scoring of a game than what we saw, you know, Clemson-Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you've got the Louisville factor. I still like Clemson, though, in the end, going on the road and being Louisville.
Let's end it with this, Riley. I want to bounce this off you, something that Jimbo Fisher said on his weekly call-in show Wednesday night, and it kind of took me aback a little bit. They're obviously one of the premier college football programs in the country. I think we would all agree on that. He thinks they're falling behind in the facilities arm race. FSU.
Oh,
have you been to FSU and seen what they have there? But this is what he said, okay? We haven't done anything for a long time here. We did when we first got here. We made a few little adjustments. Since then, we really haven't. We got to get caught up. Since Fisher arrived in 2010, the locker room was renovated, an indoor practice facility built, the players-only dorm built. But those projects were completed prior to the start of 2014. He was asked about the facility that he thinks FSU needs the most, and his answer was instantaneous. We got to get a new football operations building. We don't have enough room for offices for our coaches, for additional staff that you're going to be able to add for new coaches in all the different player development areas. Basically, where we're headed, Riley Skinner, is I think this. I think what college football head coaches want is one coach for every player.
It's becoming pro football on campus.
Unbelievable.
It's almost becoming obscene, like it needs to be regulated.
And yet, somehow, some way, I guarantee FSU will get a football operations building. Because Clemson recently built that Taj Mahal.
Which?
Yeah.
We got a tour of.
Yeah, how is it?
Holy cow.
How did that compare to the Wake Forest facility when you were there, Riley?
Who I have to compare it to is a little unfair. But, y'all, this was a 5-star hotel sitting in the middle of Clemson, South Carolina on its own island.
Yeah.
Its own little drive with a fountain to go into it. And you can't even put into words until you go and see it.
Is that on Gator Boosters, Hick? I mean, what is it? Clemson?
It is
Clemson,
unbelievable.
Right? Yeah. Is that on the Gator Booster? Somebody stepping in and giving them $40 million to build it?
Florida is building one, but not like that.
That facility at Clemson was built all out of donations.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You need somebody to step up and turn it into that.
And I tell you, it's, you know, on one side, it's great because I think it keeps a lot of the players out of trouble. I mean, they're sitting there playing putt-putt and wiffle ball and volleyball and all this stuff in their own little world. At the same time, I don't like it because you completely isolate these students, these players, from the campus life for the most part.
Right.
I mean, you go to your class, and then you're right back to your facility. But listen, we had Kyle Parker, the old quarterback, you know, from Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. He's up there as a grad assistant now, getting his degree. Yeah.
Okay.
And so met us at the facility and took us around, looking in the locker room and the weight room and just telling us the way their nutritional bar is set up, how these players can send messages down to Clemson's nutritional bar, and they have all these grad assistants and nutrition specialists that whip up these luxurious protein shake meals and will bring them to them during their meetings and all this stuff.
This is going to kill the argument that players need to be paid because they're not being treated like normal students anymore. I mean, the argument was always, well, you're asked to be a normal student and have a full-time job. You're not a normal student anymore.
No.
You're
being
treated.
That was my takeaway,
yeah.
Jeff,
is
how can people still look at what these guys have access to and say, this isn't good enough, I need cash?
It's weird, too, though,
Ross. Get over yourself.
Because you're treated like a king there, you know.
And prepared for the NFL.
Years. But guess what? The day you walk out of there.
Yeah, next man up.
You know, you can't stay here anymore. It's over.
Which is fine. All right, Riley. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the only thing I can see players getting paid for is now that you're able, which is the first year you do it, now you're able to put former college players' names on the back of jerseys. And pros can get royalties off of that. And that's the only thing I think is legitimate to get paid from. Other than that,
they're getting a lot more than it's how it's shaded, for sure. It's the Riley Report, brought to you every Thursday by Amerist Bank. Riley, we appreciate it. Where are you headed off to this weekend?
Here. Staying here.
Nice. Good
just
for you.
Just got back last night from a week-long.
Do you want to go to Gainesville with me, Riley, and go root on the Gators?
No, I don't. No? I want to watch the Jags play.
Well, we can do that on Sunday.
And the Deeks are looking good. Got their first issue.
That a boy.
All right. Listen, I've had people call in or text in and email in that are curious what we're talking about with Brian Kelly. So we'll head to break with Brian Kelly's exchange with that, you know, female cub reporter at Notre Dame. And again, I thought the criticism for Kelly outreached his actual reaction to the question. But Riley, appreciate it. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Good to hear from you.
All right. There he goes. And here's Brian Kelly Saturday night after the one-point loss to the Dogs.
Obviously, you've made a ton of changes, changed the culture, everything. But obviously, you lost at the very end, kind of like last year, 7 of 8 losses.
What's the question?
I'm getting to it.
Get to the question.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's not going to snowball. Next question.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work every day, and I coach my football team. Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Okay.
And tonight was also like that, so I was just wondering.
Losing by one possession?
Yes.
No, it was 1 point.
Okay.
Okay, great, thanks.
Thank you.